Welcome back, everyone. I'm Cass Piancy, and I am here joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Bennett Tomlin. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Today, we're discussing something that kind of comes up a lot for us, but also isn't something that we harp on, which is Bitcoin. A lot of people ask us our stance on Bitcoin because they assume, due to the fact that we don't own any right now, that we hate Bitcoin, or that we want it to fail, or even that we want it to go down in price. None of these things are true. They're just assumptions that people make about us. So I think it's important that we clarify not only our stance on Bitcoin, but why we actually like Bitcoin. The one who's going to be able to do this in a better, more respectful way than myself is Bennett Tomlin, because he knows the technical intricacies of Bitcoin. I know why I like Bitcoin, but Bennett can explain those reasons in a more in-depth way. First of all, Bennett, what brought you to Bitcoin and kept you here? Like, why are you still involved in this space?
The reason I got involved and stayed involved in crypto is because the idea of censorship-resistant payments, of being able to transfer value that no one anywhere could stop, sounded incredible to me. And it sounded like a thing that could potentially benefit huge numbers of people who frequently have trouble getting, receiving, sending payments, either due to, like, journalists in countries where there are authorities who are trying to go after journalists, having the ability for them to pay and get paid without having to go through the banking system seemed like an unequivocal good thing. It seemed like many parts of the system were designed with a certain amount of resiliency in mind. It was relatively well thought out to be a distributed, decentralized system that could withstand a lot of different shocks, not any shock, but a lot of different shocks. And so this combination of censorship resistance and resiliency is what really got me interested in Bitcoin in the first place, and then from there into crypto more broadly.
I had a similar fall down the rabbit hole. A lot of things were very attractive about Bitcoin when I learned about it. I still to this day think, like you're talking about, there's a lot of very attractive traits to Bitcoin. But obviously, a lot of it comes with caveats. I've stuck around so much because I want to help root out the issues that I see affecting Bitcoin. And those issues definitely include Tether. But if I didn't think that Bitcoin had a future, I wouldn't want to stick around to try to root out the problems that I see. Can you tell people more about Bitcoin? I assume that anyone who's listening to us has a good understanding of what Bitcoin is. But let's just talk about it. Like, what is Bitcoin?
I think the easiest way to do this is going to be talking through some of the baseline assumptions and things that separate Bitcoin from other things. The first is Bitcoin has a cap of 21 million Bitcoins, and so far they have never raised or changed that, ignoring the overflow bug when they accidentally printed a couple billion Bitcoins. And they've seemed to really develop a strong community focus on maintaining that cap. And so a lot of the reason people get interested in Bitcoin is because they feel like there's this predictability to the inflation supply. Besides that, in order to secure the Bitcoin network, there was a process called proof of work in which various miners around the world try to calculate various hashes in the hopes that they get the right number of zeros at the beginning of their hash so that they can be the one to put out the next block, right? And in doing so, when you put out the block, you are then eligible to take in the Coinbase reward, the rewards from mining that block effectively, which is how new Bitcoin enters into the network. Transacting on Bitcoin is basically involves you creating a transaction, which is a small set of text basically that describes where the Bitcoins are coming from, where they're going. You sign it using your keys and then transmit it into the memory pool where it is picked up by one of these miners and is then added to the chain. There's a few different security assumptions surrounding Bitcoin. The one Satoshi Nakamoto said is that as long as 51% of the nodes are honest, the mining nodes are honest, then you can expect that what will end up happening is your transaction will get included and will eventually be like reasonably certain of finality. I'm struggling right now to figure out how deep to go into this because there's a lot more technical nuance to some of this, like what is a blockchain, which is probably important, I'm talking about how these miners mine in these discrete blocks, and they include just a subset of the transactions and get a certain reward for doing so. The reason blockchains are called blockchains is because each block includes some type of hash, pointer, something that gives you some clue what the previous block was. This is important because it helps you put all the transactions in the right order, and having the transactions in the right order means you can make sure that no coin is being spent twice. Because Bitcoin is trying to do this, determine when coins were spent and who had spent them in a distributed, decentralized version, it can be difficult to coordinate. That's the fundamental problem that Satoshi was trying to solve.
I think that's going to be a lot for some people to take in, but I'm just going to give the best Butcoin-esque version of what you just said that I've ever heard, which is, it's like if idling your car 24/7 occasionally produced solved Sudoku puzzles that you could then exchange for heroin. That sounds like a goofball explanation for what Bitcoin is, but Bitcoin is, it's a history of transactions on a decentralized database. The only way you can get the next transaction and get the authority to show proof of that transaction occurring is by mining a block, right? Or seven transactions. The only way to do that is by mining a block. And to mine that block, you have to solve a puzzle. And to solve that puzzle, it's gotten more and more difficult to solve that puzzle. Now, it requires a warehouse full of miners, hundreds, thousands, millions of them in a warehouse somewhere. And they're all chugging at the same time, trying to solve this puzzle and win this block.
Yeah. So these miners are specially designed chips that are optimized to work just on the algorithm that Bitcoin is using for its hashing to determine who gets the next block effectively. And so chip makers design chips that are designed to work as good as possible on that. Then the miners buy these in massive quantities and use the maximum amount of them they can while still remaining profitable.
Which is hard to do. I think Bitcoin mining is something that even most people involved in Bitcoin don't have a firm grasp or understanding of. I have had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in China, so I got to see with my own eyes a nice big warehouse full of miners running on hydroelectric energy, and it was a sight to behold. It was an experience, and if anyone can do it, I suggest you go and do it. It's really something to witness. I also think there's a lot of pitfalls with Bitcoin. One of the first questions being, who was Bitcoin created by, and does it even matter?
We don't know who Bitcoin was created by. They went by the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, and to this day, we don't know who or how many people that pseudonym represents. We know they disappeared only a couple years into Bitcoin existing, and since then, none of the coins attributed to them have moved. So it seems likely they either died or chose to completely step away from the project. The reason it might be valuable to know who Satoshi is because if they are still alive, they control such a large portion of Bitcoin's total supply, right? I said there's a cap of 21 million, and estimates put Satoshi's holdings at right around 1 million of that total. They hold about 5% of the total Bitcoins that will ever exist. And so if that person is still alive and can move or liquidate those coins, they have a lot of influence and power then because of that. On the flip side of that, them being pseudonymous, them not being a person that can be targeted easily by governments, by businesses, by other entities, does provide a little bit of a extra protection to Bitcoin in that regard. Ethereum, for example, at this point now has a much more globally distributed development and stuff like that, but early on in Ethereum's history, Vitalik was one of the main developers, and a government putting sufficient pressure on him might have made it so Ethereum as we know it now never would have existed. And so you can kind of see from there where the argument for the pseudonymity comes from.
The problem with the pseudonymity for Bitcoin is this running fear that there's different people who have different thoughts on who Satoshi is. There's people who will tell you it's the NSA. There's people who will tell you it is, I don't want to name names. Let's not even get into that. It's really not worth anyone's time. There's a lot of people who are convinced that Satoshi was one of these people and that therefore it has dictated the path and the trajectory of where Bitcoin is destined to go and ultimately what it was destined to be in the first place. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. I tend to be on the side that Bitcoin was created by possibly a criminal, but even in that sense, I do find Bitcoin to be incredibly valuable. I think it's a really, really cool tool, and it's very valuable to, let me rephrase that. It could be valuable to a lot of people one day.
And I think kind of what you're inching towards here is the shifting narratives for Bitcoin over its lifetime, right? Like how often early on it was focused purely on payments and even like relatively small transactions and things like that were a foundational part of Bitcoin's usage. And over time, that narrative has become increasingly less seen. And more often now, what you'll see is Bitcoiners who treat Bitcoin as a modern neo-gold, that using some twisted form of Austrian economics, they convince themselves that because Bitcoin has this 21 million cap, because Bitcoin is deflationary, it is inherently the hardest and soundest money that exists and will therefore outcompete other currencies and other stores of value, eventually accruing to it their value. For me, I don't think having a deflationary currency as any kind of global reserve or anything like that is desirable or good. I worry it promotes a very much negative and zero-sum form of thinking and eliminates the possibility for the same kind of productivity growth, population growth, and other fundamental types of growth that we've seen. Because when you have a deflationary currency representing this type of supply, you become, in effect, a feudal lord, guaranteed in perpetuity your percentage of the total wealth as long as you do nothing whatsoever. And that societally feels dangerous to me.
On that note, I would actually love to hear what you hope the future of Bitcoin is, and if you were to become a coiner and buy Bitcoin, what you think the purpose would be for someone like you or anyone else who you think might want to get involved for not just strictly number go up?
I think that there's a good chance in the distant future of Bitcoin, the 21 million cap is regarded as a relic, as like a decision Satoshi made at the beginning that was necessary for the growth, but had to be removed for Bitcoin to eventually fill its desired role. The reason I think that is largely related to what I said before, that I think a society with a deflationary currency accounting for that kind of value does not work. I also think that the security budget, meaning the money needed to pay out to the miners to continue to protect the Bitcoin network, at least as well as they have been, becomes increasingly expensive in terms of fees paid by those making transactions because the emitted Bitcoins keep going down as time goes on. The effect of this is that the longer Bitcoin exists, the smaller the proportion of people who will be able to actually transact on the main chain using Bitcoin is. And so my fundamental issue with this goal, with this idea for Bitcoin, is that it eventually leads to most people losing the fundamental censorship resistance because they get shunted off to layers far enough above the chain that they're now effectively getting similar trust guarantees to transacting using Venmo or PayPal or whatever. And that if the only desire for Bitcoin is to become that global reserve currency and it exists in that state where people are getting the same trust guarantees as they were before, but now there's a bunch of Bitcoiners in power, that seems bad. So what would make me want to buy Bitcoin? I could see owning a small portion of Bitcoin as a speculative bet. But as you said, we have to ignore the number go up reason, so that one's out. I do still think for like international settlements, international payments, large movements of value across jurisdictions, legal or illegal, there is value in Bitcoin. It does that well. There's some issues, of course, with the volatility in the market of Bitcoin right now, but it still works for that largely. So if I had to do something like that, I could see using Bitcoin to accomplish it.
And I'm going to actually agree with that. The main use case in my mind for me not that I would ever do this, but that I could see myself using it for, is that I have friends and kind of family in China, and my ability to move, let's say, one or two Bitcoin via flying in an airplane to China versus trying to move that amount in any other asset, almost, like whether it's gold or cash or collectibles, like whatever it may be, those are going to be more difficult to get across borders than a tiny little thumb drive that I'm like, oh, it just has some pictures on it, you know? So I do see a real value to being able to do something like that. And then if I took that over to China and I just dropped that hardware wallet off with family who need money desperately or whatever, then I wouldn't have had to go through a much more complicated process to get that money to them. Now, let's not give too much credit there, because when I send money to China, I'll tell you right now, I do not send money with Bitcoin, because it would be a fucking nightmare. What I do is I send money with PayPal's whatever version of international remittances. And yeah, they take, I don't know what percent, they take whatever it is, X 1% or something, right? And that's a chunk of change and it hurts. But when I'm sending $1,000, that's just not that big a deal.
Yeah, and I think you're also kind of hinting at something there too, is there's a tendency among crypto as a whole to talk about what crypto could be good for. But there's a little bit less discussion of like what crypto's currently being used for or what it's currently good for. So there's lots of times you'll hear us discuss how Bitcoin could be great for X, if only Y. But the Y we're talking about is something that is incredibly unlikely to happen. Like my saying before, if Bitcoin were to remove its cap, I would be a lot happier with some of the assumptions underlying it, both in terms of security budget and like its ability to function as a stateless money. However, the removal of Bitcoin's hard cap is something that is extraordinarily unlikely to happen, because there's enough Bitcoiners who would be willing to ride Bitcoin to the ground rather than ever consider changing that number.
So let's just kind of go out with like, I want to hear what your desires are for the future of Bitcoin outside the scope of like, yeah, we don't want Tether involved in this. Yeah, we don't want Ponzi schemes and scams, even though we know they're going to be a part of this space actively for probably decades to come. What do you want to see from Bitcoin? What keeps you hanging in here and wanting to improve it? Because that's what I see your role as. I'm sure a lot of other people don't see it that way. And I think, honestly, at this point, my role is less wanting to improve Bitcoin as much as like clean up the messiest space I've ever seen, the messiest industry I've ever seen in my life. But you come from a more genuine wanting to fix something that you're seeing as kind of nearing being broken. So what do you want to see? What's the hope here?
I think foundationally, there needs to be a lot less attention given to Bitcoiners and people in and around Bitcoin who are cheering on things that undermine Bitcoin's fundamental value. So if we say its fundamental value comes from resiliency, censorship resistance, and the fact that it is this distributed global system, then the people you want to look out for are those who seem to only be interested in it as a speculative asset, who spend much more time discussing the price than the security assumptions. The people who are cheering on Wall Street banks and stuff, custodying it and taking more of it into their control. I think the people who need to be given more time in Bitcoin are those who are working on the really hard problems of like dealing with some of the privacy issues in Bitcoin, dealing with some of the fungibility issues and making sure these coins are exchangeable, and the people who are willing to have discussions about the underlying assumptions regarding like the monetary policy, the security budget, and these really difficult, thorny things that really lie at the heart of long-term success of a project like Bitcoin, because speculative manias eventually end. No matter how long they last, they will eventually end. And if it lacks the things that brought it value in the first place, by that point, the result will be brutal.
I think that's a good overarching discussion of some critical views about Bitcoin, while also letting our audience know that we don't hate this space. So if you've been listening to us thinking we're going to call everything a Ponzi and tell you it's all going to go to zero. That isn't why we're here. We try to take somewhat of a nuanced perspective about most of these issues, unless they're outright scams and frauds. We both like Bitcoin. Bennett cares more about the future of Bitcoin than I do. But I think both of our hearts are in the right place, and both of us do see genuine function for Bitcoin. I hope that came across in a not super combative way. And next time, we're hopefully going to be talking about something that isn't so positive.